Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of October 29th. This week we feature an interview with Professor Joel Goldstein of St. Louis University, who is an expert on the vice presidency. We spoke to him immediately after the debate between Vice President Joe Biden and Representative Paul Ryan. I began by asking him what, if anything, surprised him about the debate.
What surprised me was that as much of the debate focused on national security issues as it did, I thought that there would be, you know, given the fact that I think that the focus of the election has been on domestic issues and the economy and so forth, it seemed that a lot of the debate was on international issues, which I think haven't been as much a focus of the campaign. There was, I thought, less mention of the principal candidates, it seemed to me, than I would have thought. You know, it was more focused on what did they think about the respective issues, what were their positions, less really discussion, I thought, of, you know, what were the positions of the two principals to some extent, what were the characteristics of the two principals. Those were sort of the main general reaction. I mean, I guess I thought that it was, I thought going in that the Democrats needed a draw, and that a draw would be a victory for the Democrats, much in the same way that I think the in 1984 that the Bush-Ferraro debate that the Republicans needed a draw, and I think that they certainly got that. It seemed to me that, I mean, I thought they both, you know, did well on some points, and but it seems to me that the debate is one that sort of is likely to change the discussion from Romney's catching up to focus on some of the things that were said during the debate.
Now, you had a big age gap here. Was that unique, the kind of the generational difference between the two here?
Yeah, I think that I saw somewhere that the age difference between Biden and Ryan was the largest in history. I mean, it was just it's the largest since 1904, I think, when Henry Davis was 80 and Charles Fairbanks was 52, I think, is what I read. So that was 28 years, and the difference between the two of them is, what, 27 years, and I think it's narrowly more than the difference between Dan Quayle and Lloyd Benson. So, but yes, it was, I mean, it's about a generation. They're from two different generations, really, and, you know, so that was unusual.
Now, there was one question, of course, of interest to us where they talked about a bit about their Catholic faith and how it related to their position on abortion. Is there some precedent for that, for candidates talking so personally about their faith and how it informs their positions on certain issues?
I don't remember a specific question, but you know, I think that something like that was asked, for instance, to Representative Ferraro.
Sure, yeah.
And I, you know, I mean, you know, that was an instance where she was criticized by, you know, by leaders of the church.
Mm-hmm. I also spoke to Professor Goldstein earlier in the day, before the debate, when we talked a bit about the history of the vice presidency and how it has been shaped by the debates, and also a little bit about the history of Catholic vice presidents.
Maybe we can just begin by talking about this year. The debate seems to be garnering a lot of attention. Why do you think that's the case?
I think a few things. One is that I think the main reason is that the presidential debate was surprising in the extent to which, you know, it was perceived to be a impressive performance by Governor Romney and a not very good performance by the president. And since it seems to have changed the dynamic of the race from one that was clearly going in Obama's direction and where Romney was floundering to the last week, Romney has had some momentum and has done better. So I think the vice presidential debate then becomes sort of a chance for Vice President Biden to change the political narrative, to get the Obama campaign back on the track it was on by, you know, emphasizing some issues that the Democrats think they can score on. And for the Republicans, I think it's important to try and, you know, sustain the momentum. So I think there's that. Then I think the other aspect of it is that, you know, Representative Ryan's a new face. this is a significant part of his introduction to the American people. So it's important for him, and it's also, I think there's a certain amount of curiosity, who is this guy and what's he like?
It seems there's the narrative, too, of here you have, and this is, of course, interest to us, two Catholics,
right,
but from different generations and obviously different parties. So at least for some, that's an interesting dynamic.
Sure, sure. I mean, it's the first time that you have two Catholic running mates, or both parties have had a Catholic running mate, and so that's obviously that's a unique aspect of it, and I think particularly to members of the Catholic Church, or it is, and I think they represent, as you say, different generations, and also I think they're identified with different parts of Catholic thinking.
Maybe you can just offer a little historical perspective on the vice presidential debates. You know, how long have they been going on? That sort of thing.
Sure. The vice presidential debates really began in 1976. There'd, you know, been some rumblings about having them before then, but 1976, the Walter Mondale-Bob Dole vice presidential debate was the first one. It was one of a package of four debates that the League of Women Voters proposed that year, three presidential, one vice presidential. And we've had one vice presidential debate every election cycle since then, except for 1980 when Mondale and George H.W. Bush didn't debate. I think by and large, with the possible exception of 1976, I think they haven't really affected the outcome. My own view is that 1976 did have some significance in shaping the outcome. Mondale, I think, had a clear victory over Senator Dole, and in the last 3 weeks of the campaign, particularly, really became sort of an asset for the Carter ticket. He campaigned heavily in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, which Carter narrowly won, and those electoral votes were critical to Carter winning. But in other instances, the VP debate hasn't affected the outcome, but there have been a number of important and interesting debates and moments. 1984, Geraldine Ferraro, the first woman on a national ticket, and that was a situation that in some respects was similar to this one, where President Reagan had a bad first debate. Vice President Mondale was widely perceived to have really gotten the best of him, and there were a lot of questions about whether the president was still up to the job. He was 74, and Vice President Bush was in sort of the high-pressure situation of not only debating the first woman, but also of sort of reversing the momentum. And then, of course, the 88 debate is the one that's had the famous exchange with Senator Benson's sort of smackdown of Senator Quayle, you know, Jack Kennedy.
Right.
And then 92 was the three-way debate, including Admiral Stockdale, where he made the line, who am I, why am I here, and which sort of brought down the House. 96 and 2000 were very civil debates. But in the 2008 debate was really the most watched vice presidential debate in history, second most watched debate in history, and that's the only time when it's the only election cycle where the VP debate has attracted a larger viewership than the presidential debates. So they've been interesting theater, even when they haven't been decisive politically. And they're also, because in many instances they've involved people who were new to the national stage, they've provided an important vehicle to sort of introduce those people to the American people more broadly. Five occasions we've had incumbent vice presidents debating. This will be the fifth. Most of the time, one or even two people on the stage are people who really haven't had much exposure to a national audience. They haven't run for president, and so this really is important in terms of educating voters a little bit about these people.
In 2008, the popularity, was that largely due to Sarah Palin, or were there other factors at work there?
I think a large part it was just the curiosity of about Governor Palin. I mean, you know, I think some of it was you know, she was a novelty. Not only was she a new face, but there was something sort of exotic. Second woman on a ticket, first woman from Alaska, person who was young and who self-styled maverick, and then I think also just the people were curious as to how she was going to do. Yeah, I think a lot of people thought that, you know, she might just self-destruct in a historic way, particularly after the Katie Couric interview. And so I think there was a lot of curiosity in that way. I mean,
now if we look at the larger historical perspective, of course, the vice presidency has often been a role that a lot of people did not want because they didn't think it was very influential or powerful. Has the debates changed that at all? Has it given more prominence to that position and that role?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, historically, the vice presidency has been target of derision. That really changed. I mean, as with many historical changes, history doesn't sort of turn on pivot on a dime. But sometimes it's more evolutionary. And so the office was growing in the 20th century, particularly after the New Deal and World War II and the move into an atomic age where national government took on more responsibility and the presidency became more powerful both domestically and internationally. And that sort of pulled the vice presidency into the executive branch. Previously, vice presidents had spent most of their professional time presiding over the Senate, but beginning really around 1952 or 53 with the Nixon vice presidency, they began taking on executive roles. But it really they really became significant players in the executive branch in 1977 when Walter Mondale became vice president. He sort of transformed the office, and ever since then, the vice president has really been a significant participant in White House decision-making and an important troubleshooter for the president on a wide range of problems. The debates, you know, I think did play an important role or a contributing role in this change because in a couple ways. Number one, when you're making a vice presidential selection, if you're making it with the awareness that for 90 minutes during the campaign, your running mate's going to be on a national stage, sharing a national stage with his or her counterpart, and that's going to be the main story of the campaign, not only for that night, but for a day or so before and for a few days after. It cautions you to choose somebody who's ready for prime time and who's going to come through as a presidential figure. If you choose badly, it may reflect on the person who made the selection. So I think it's been one of the factors that has helped elevate the or give presidential candidates additional incentive to choose able people as their running mates. It's also, I think, symbolically it's important. I mean, if it was thought that we didn't need to have a vice presidential debate, that would send a message that the office is really insignificant. The fact that there is a vice presidential debate sends just the opposite message, that it is significant. I mean, you and I wouldn't be talking right now but for this debate. And so it focuses attention on the office and, you know, what the vice president does. And so I think that does, contribute in some sense to the rise of the vice presidency. And then I think the third thing is that in the popular vote, we don't get to vote separately for the vice president. We vote for the ticket, or we really vote for electors who are pledged to the ticket. And most people cast their vote primarily based upon their views of the people at the top of the ticket. But the vice presidential debate really gives some information about the vice presidential candidates and gives us a greater chance to factor, you know, what we see and hear into our decision as to how to vote. So I think it contributes to the democratization of the process by providing more information about, you know, somebody who's going to be a heartbeat away.
And of course, in this kind of media culture, culture we're in now. 2016 is always around the corner, and this, in many cases, has served as kind of a, as you mentioned before, an introduction to some potential candidates 4 years down the road. And in this case, I think Biden and Ryan would have both been talked about as potential candidates.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think the vice presidency is the number one springboard to the presidency or to a presidential candidacy. I mean, not all vice presidents and not all vice presidential candidates wind up being nominated or elected president. But, you know, if you compare, I mean, if you're a vice president or a vice presidential candidate, your likelihood of getting a presidential nomination or being a serious presidential candidate is greater than if you're a governor or a senator or any other position. So oftentimes we are looking at people who are likely presidents, presidential nominees, or presidential candidates of the future. And I think in this instance, as you point out, I mean, I think Representative Ryan was clearly mentioned as one of the people, one of the sort of the rising stars in the Republican Party, somebody who some people urged to run for president this time, and who I think people think, particularly after his selection, but even before, is a very plausible candidate for 2016 if Governor Romney's not elected. And Vice President Biden, you know, hasn't made known his plans yet, but he also has been left the door open to the possibility of running in 2016. He's run before, and it certainly is one of the people who would be in the forefront of the discussion on the Democratic side in 2016. I was just sort of jotting down the Catholic vice presidential candidates. And so you've got, I mean, you had William Miller in 64, Muskie in 68, Eagleton and Shriver both in 72, Ferraro in, nobody in 76, nobody in 80, but then Ferraro in 84, nobody in 88, nobody in 92, nobody in 96, nobody in 2000, but then you have, and then 2004, you have Kerry on the as presidential candidate, and then Biden in 2008, Biden and Ryan in 2012. So, I mean, counting Biden twice, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times where there's been a Catholic vice presidential candidate. I mean, I guess in 72, you had Eagleton and Shriver on the Democratic ticket, so you had two vice presidential, Catholic vice presidential candidates that year, but sequentially, not concurrently, and on the same ticket. This time, you have a Catholic on each ticket. And of course, you know, John Kennedy in 1956, when Adlai Stevenson threw the nomination open at the convention, JFK really ran for it and narrowly missed securing the vice presidential nomination at the 56th convention, narrowly lost to Estes Kefauver. Kennedy, Theodore Sorensen, who was his Senate aide, had circulated a memo in advance of the convention arguing that a Catholic on the ticket would be very helpful to the Democrats' chances. So he'd actually, you know, tried to use religion as a reason why Kennedy would be a good vice presidential candidate. He narrowly lost the nomination, and in retrospect saw that it was the best thing that happened. I mean, if he'd been nominated, he'd have been on the ticket with Adlai Stevenson. They would have lost in a landslide to Eisenhower and Nixon. Some people would have, you know, attributed it to his religion. It would have at least raised the question of whether the United States had moved past 1928 in the Al Smith. And it would have probably made it much less likely that Kennedy would have been the nominee in 1960. So in a way, the history of the vice presidency and Catholic candidates even goes back to 1956, of that near miss, which, you know, in a way was sort of what enabled Kennedy to overcome the religious bigotry in 1960 and be elected. And then after that, it really changed the discussion, so that in 1964, President Johnson was sort of wondering whether he needed to pick a Catholic running mate. I think even before William Miller was picked on the Republican ticket, but But after that, you know, considered Eugene McCarthy, considered some other people. But, you know, and then 68, 72, a Catholic is on the Democratic running mate. So in a way, it does have some connection to Kennedy's effort in 56.
Yeah, it's interesting. We focus a lot on, you know, Al Smith in 28, Kennedy in 60, you know, John Kerry in 2004, but it seems like there's been a good number more vice presidential Catholic candidates, and they may have changed the dynamic and helped prepare the country for a potential Catholic president.
I think that's right, and I mean, I think it's also part of a larger story of, you know, opening doors in America. And I mean, the Kennedy race, and particularly you know, his speech to the Houston ministers, and you know, and some of the other statements that he made really throughout the campaign, you know, and I mean, there were suggestions in 1960, right when he announced for his candidacy in January of 1960, that, well, maybe he should be the vice presidential candidate in 1960, and that would be helpful in getting Catholic votes. And Kennedy said, you know, I'm not going to be the vice presidential candidate, and if I'm passed over because of my religion, don't expect me to go on the ticket to help get Catholic votes. And if I'm passed over because of my religion, you can't expect American Catholics to be, you know, to overlook that. But, you know, I think the Kennedy election, and particularly after the speech of the Houston ministers, you know, was an important door opener. And so, you know, if you add to that list of people that, you know, in 2000 you have Joe Lieberman, the first Jewish candidate on a ticket. In 2008 you have Barack Obama, the first African-American on a ticket. It's part of a story of American pluralism, of, you know, opening doors. You know, I mean, you look at it in other institutions with the Supreme Court. It used to be that there was talk about appointing somebody to the Catholic seat, somebody to the Jewish seat.
Right.
Well, right now there's six of the nine members of the court are Catholic,
right,
and three of them are Jewish. So, and I don't believe that any of those people were appointed by presidents of either party based on their religion, whereas that used to be the criteria, or a criteria, when somebody who was Catholic, somebody who was Jewish was appointed. So it does reflect one way in which I think our society has advanced, and what Kennedy did in 1960 played an important part.
I want to thank Professor Goldstein again for joining us. A reminder that you can subscribe to this podcast at americamagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.